What's up? Welcome to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. It is Jamie Dodd and my co-host Thomas Drance, who also covers the team for The Athletic. We're broadcasting live from the Kintec studio. Kintec Footwear and Orthotics working together with you in step. 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Metro Vancouver's trusted choice for contractors and rental warriors for over 50 years. Visit them at one of their three locations to serve you or online at DunbarLumber.com. Do you want to fill everyone in on why we're holding back laughter? No?
No, all right. It's fine.
I will.
I've never seen a man eat a banana more quickly than Eric Dolly.
We've got the crossover coming up.
I was losing my mind the entire time.
We got the crossover coming up here, and we can see into their studios currently. And so we have a picture of Don Taylor, a picture of Rick Dhaliwal. Dhaliwal was holding a banana in each hand, wildly gesticulating with them for some reason. And then
I think he was trying to help a plane land.
Unpeeled one and absolutely crushed it. So I guess he's ready to go.
He's ready to go.
Bananas in. He's done going nuts with them.
He's potassium loaded. We're set.
I've been told we're to go directly to them off the course of the show or off the top of the show right now. So without further ado, let's get it started here. It is time for the crossover with Don Taylor and Rick Dhaliwal. You can catch him Monday to Friday, 10 to noon on Check TV as part of Donnie and Dolly. And they join us now, as they do every Wednesday, for the crossover. Rick, how are those bananas, buddy?
I asked Taylor, I go, do I got time to eat a banana? And he goes, yes. I wasn't going to eat it.
Well, and you did. I snuck it in. You had time.
Rick, if you eat a banana like that, you've always got time for a banana.
Fiber, potassium.
Hey, you don't have to sell me on bananas, my
nutrients.
Guy. I love them. I had one this morning. I just like leisurely ate it. That was honestly like, if Ron Popeil was like, and this machine eats bananas faster than any machine, yours for five easy payments of $19.99, it would just be Rick Dhaliwal sitting there.
Hold on, I thought we were old. You're referencing Ron Popeil?
Hey, the GOAT.
I love this.
Yeah. The
Who's
GOAT.
That? Pocket Fisherman.
Yeah, the food dehydrator.
Late
Let's
night
go.
Infomercials. Yes.
I'm more of a, who's the slap chop
Ron
guy?
Popeil,
oh, man. No. Just
that
no
wasn't
on that
him,
guy.
But
yeah, no,
Ron
no,
Popeil had a product. Do you remember his product? I believe it was Ron Popeil. It was called GLH. It was spray-on hair.
Yeah.
Which I'm thinking some of us here, including myself, could use.
Okay, I just Googled Ron Popeil. And now I remember him.
He's the greatest pitch man of all time.
He's the infomercial guy.
Yeah. Love Ron Popeil.
Is he still with us, by the way?
I don't know.
No.
He would have been up there a long
no.
time ago.
No, died in 2021.
Sadly.
R.I.P. Yeah. R.I.P. Ron Popeil. Anyways, all right, so guys, I mean, there's no shortage of things that have developed since
Set
the last time
and
we talked.
Forget it! Yay!
Sorry. No shortage of things that have developed. JT Miller stuff over the weekend, we'll get into it. But in the midst of it, I mean, the Canucks, they got games on the schedule. They're still playing games. The one on Saturday went pretty well for them. That was fun. Last night, though, back to not getting blown out or anything, but just the lack of energy in that game, top to bottom, from Vancouver, from the Sabres, I thought. You know, the crowd's not into it because the teams aren't into it. That was a tough watch. And, of course, it doesn't help that they end up blowing a lead and losing in regulation. But it just seems that the atmosphere, the vibes around this team are so bizarre. It's impacting the entertainment value of the product as well.
You just made a great point that we didn't make on our show. That rarely happens, Jamie. But, like, the Sabres didn't have a lot of energy last night.
No, they were bad, too.
I mean, they played the night before. It was boring. And the how do you not get inspired by what happened Saturday? How can you not, you know, carry some of that emotion over? You're playing the last place team that had played the night before in Seattle and lost, and you have a 2-1 lead midway through the third period, and not only do you lose, but you lose in regulation. Yeah. You don't even get a point out of it. And I'm saying that is, to me, the low point of the season, as bad as those losses to the Jets and Kings were, because you should have been inspired by those two losses too. It was horrible last night. I felt really, and I'm not the only one, I don't think, in this town. I know I'm not. I felt indifferent afterwards. And that's the worst thing that can happen to a pro sports franchise, when you've got people in your city going, feeling indifferent. That was really bad last night.
Yeah, and guys, I just don't understand the one step forward, one step back. Last year they had winning streaks, numerous winning streaks. They've gone now basically 8 weeks without back-to-back wins. I don't get that. And they got to get on a heater here soon. They got to get on a winning streak because, look, St. Louis is tied with them, right? Calgary gained a game in hand, and they're 1 point behind the Flames. I give the Flames credit, guys. I think, Thomas, you were one of the guys a few weeks ago, I think it was in a conversation with me on the phone, kind of laughed and said, no, they'll be gone. You know, give them credit. You know, they got the goaltending in Wolf.
I'll give them credit, but I haven't changed my mind.
You still think they're going to fold like a cheap tent?
Utah's the threat. It's Utah.
Utah's
the one to watch for. Calgary, I don't think, is going to have staying power. St. Louis, I don't take seriously at all. But Utah, I do. Utah, I think, is the threat.
Okay, we'll keep an eye on that. But I just don't understand how this team can, never mind a winning streak. I mean, they can't win two in a row. Like, I just don't get it. You remember they beat Florida at home 4-0, and everyone was like, okay, this is it. And the next game, Hockey Night in Canada, 5-1 loss to the Bruins. Like, the way they go from victories that are really significant and great to absolutely, like, losses that are, you just shake your head. I mean, Buffalo played the night before in Seattle, and not only did they play the night before, they coughed up 6 goals. Like, if you look at Buffalo the last 2 games, they've allowed 11 goals. And then here come the Canucks, who haven't scored more than 3 goals in their last 7 games. They haven't been able to, you know, get over 3 in 7 consecutive games. And the schedule is not getting easier, guys. Never mind the Oilers tomorrow. The Capitals are here Saturday. You know, you mentioned the Blues, Thomas. You got to go to St. Louis and Dallas next week. They haven't played Dallas all year. So the schedule is not going to be very nice to them as well.
It was supposed to be easy last night.
Yeah, exactly.
That was the one break, and they couldn't come through. But, Jamie, you said just that no energy in the building. Even if they won last night, it was just like, wow, man, it was just completely dead.
Where would that?
I was looking forward to it so much after Saturday.
There was energy during that second period shift. That one second period shift where the, you know, Sabres had multiple sticks break and Besser, Patterson, Hughes. You could feel the anticipation, but man, there have been so few moments. Like even their first goal, right? It's a deflection off the end board.
Well, that's what I want to be clear. I'm not ripping the fans.
No,
the team has to give them energy to feed off at a certain 100%. Point, right? And they're just not doing that at all.
I mean, the first period was like a David Hume treatise on.
Just what we were all thinking, of course.
On religion. Yeah. No, I mean, imagine.
Can we get back to Ron Popeil?
imagine the most boring thing you could spend doing with your time.
Yeah.
That's what the first period was, a David Hume treatise. Anyway, so you've already put the fans behind the eight ball, then the club falls behind, then you get back into it with a bounce, and then you get that shift, and like for a moment you could feel it. But you come into the third period, and the Canucks have nothing again until after J.J. Paterka breaks the game open twice. And I actually liked what the Canucks were able to generate after they fell behind. That urgency was just completely absent from their game, aside from that moment, and aside from one moment where Hughes, Pettersson, and Besser combined to smell some blood in the water. And it's like, okay, great. You know, 7 to 8 minutes in which the vibes looked on, in which you looked like a hardworking team with some juice. You know, this team's not good enough to get away with 10 good minutes against the Buffalo Sabres. And by the way, that's a problem in and of itself.
You know, and we've talked about this before, but the thing that really bothers me about this team, it should bother Canuck fans and the Canucks themselves, is that you just mentioned, you know, that one shift in the second period and what happened at the end of the game or near the end of the game when they fell behind. The rest of the evening, they didn't really have it. All last season, Rick Tocchet talked about that sometimes there are games or there are nights, there are moments when you don't have it and you have to be professional enough to overcome that. And they just haven't done that this year at all. I thought that was great last season. I love what he said, because I don't care what level of sports you've played. You've all had moments or nights where you just don't have it. But you, at the professional level especially, you have to fight through it. And they just don't this year. And I don't know about you guys, But looking at Rick Tocchet postgame, pretty much the last few weeks, but last night, he looked defeated.
He looked beat up. He looked stressed out. He looks like a guy who has run out of, you know, trying to figure this out. And for the crowd out there that wants Tocchet fired, so who's coming in to be the fourth coach in 4 years? Like, who's going to work with this core? Travis Green couldn't fix it. Bruce Boudreaux couldn't fix it. Tocchet can't. Oh, but there's somebody out there that's going to come in and work miracles with this core and get them to where they want to. And here's the other thing on Tocchet. I'm sorry, guys. But Alvin just said, the general manager just said 2 days ago, we like him. We want to sign him long term. And everybody wants him fired, but the management wants him back. But I'm not so sure that guy right now has got the warm and fuzzies about returning to Vancouver.
Well, and just...
They called it a two-way street.
Yeah. First of all, you're preaching to the choir, Rick, about the four coaches in 4 years. I completely agree. Like, there's that... Yeah. That is just absurd to me. That it's like, oh, no, it's just the wrong coach. Again, we just got to go and find another fun offensive guy to get back to the... Like, no, absolutely not. I do think we're kind of dancing around the elephant in the room here about talking about, you know, the vibes and the lack of energy and how off everything seems, how off Rick Tocchet seems. The JT Miller stuff. I mean, when you get to the point that we got to on Saturday, and I know you were all over the story, Rick, and you and Drance had a great piece up at The Athletic over the weekend. When you get to the point where a guy is almost held out because it seems like a trade is imminent, then it falls apart. Now you're in this kind of weird area where we know they're trying to trade him, but he's still here. He's still with the team. Nothing seems imminent. I mean, how could the vibes not be off, right? Like, that's got to be difficult for everyone. And I get it's not as easy as just picking up the phone and saying, all right, we're doing a deal. He's gone today. But how long can you sit in this? This is painful. I don't think it's help. It's obviously not helping the team. Yeah, it's tough for the fans. It's tough to watch. I get it. You can't just give him away for nothing. You got to try to get the best deal. But man, it feels like you need to rip the Band-Aid off too.
But you know what? The pro sports in general, but let's stick with the professional level here. It is full of, maybe not full of, but there are examples of teams where nobody gets along, or some of the key players don't get along, and yet they somehow survive. In fact, they thrive and they win championships. I'm going to go Ron Popeil here for a second and look back to the 70s. The Oakland A's with Reggie Jackson and Vida Blue and Blue Moon Odom, they hated each other. They couldn't stand it. Gene Tennis, none of them liked each other. There were no friends on that team. They won three World Series in a row. And it can happen. And what's going on with the Canucks right now is nothing. So maybe it affects Miller and Pettersson. What about everybody else, Rick?
Yep.
What about everybody?
It affects everybody.
You're trying to hold on to jobs. You're trying to win games. You're trying to improve your legacy. Whatever the case may be, I don't know. I just at some point, pride's got to kick in. But you can overcome stuff like that. Brock, there's other examples, too. That was an old man example.
Where was I think Brock said yesterday – no, 2 days ago I practiced that the outside – well, the noise – It's been the worst since he's been in Vancouver in 8 years. And you know what?
The noise, he's dealt with a lot of it.
The coach.
Like, what a statement.
And he's dealt with it. Remember with Boudreaux, where his age. Yeah. So
Besser spent years on the trade block. Like, years. This guy.
Oh, years.
Spent years on the trade block. If he's saying it, we should weight that heavily.
Yeah. That was Brock saying the outside noise this year is probably the worst he has seen it. That's something for a guy who's been here since he was drafted by the Vancouver Canucks. And look, management has to take blame on this. You come out in an article and rip Pettersson and then say he's available 3 months into an 8-year deal, okay? You are inviting tons of media across North America to look into the Vancouver Canucks. Every single day you can see a top insider with something to say about the Canucks. Miller's going here, there. Pettersson's going here, there. This outside noise, it has affected the dressing room. It has affected the coaches. And they will gladly tell you it has. And Tocchet wasn't brought here to babysit. He wasn't brought here to babysit two guys, two stars who don't get along. That's not a part of the negotiations and going to a team. Oh, by the way, you gotta babysit two guys who don't like each other. It has been a chaotic year. It has been an absolute and again, I keep using the word, and I'm going to, I'm sorry, but the noise ain't going to stop until one of those two is traded. It's not.
It's also not just, you know, I feel like we've come to a point in hockey where we are so differential in how we speak to players, right, that we say things or ask questions about the outside noise as a proxy for just general dysfunction, right? It's like, let's call it outside noise, because if we call it, you know, what about the dysfunction in your locker room? They'll be like, no, that's all you guys. That's all. Why are you guys playing with no heart?
Yeah.
You know, like, you don't, it's not all us. We're watching you guys play. Like, you can't hide in this market. We know what we're seeing. We saw you guys try last year. We know you're not now. Like, we know there's something off. That's not outside noise. That's real, right? Like, there's a real dynamics issue, clearly, that the club is grappling with here. It's not the noise that's been worse than ever. It's the sort of overall day-to-day operation that's clearly in this group's way, and we're seeing it night to night.
And Donnie, to your point about, you know, hey, guys can not get along, but the team can still have success, you're absolutely right. I mean, there's a lot of examples of that throughout pro sports.
They're just not doing it.
Well, and the thing is, I think if they trade Miller, the easy way to frame it is going to be they traded Miller because him and Pettersson didn't get along. But to me, it's going to be they traded Miller because the core has shown over a period of 6 years they're not capable of consistently competing at a high enough level. And maybe that's related to him and Petey not getting along. You know what I mean? But I don't think it's going to be as simple as, oh, well, these guys really didn't like each other, so we had to trade one. I think it's much more this core, for whatever reason, just can't mesh consistently enough to go get it done on the ice at a high enough level. I think
year after year, the way most of the teams
they're related, but they're distinct things.
Yes, I agree.
Yeah. Yeah, the core as it's constructed right now doesn't seem to be working. Maybe last year was a blip. And I know a lot of the people that we have on who've played in the National Hockey League, they will say something like this when it comes to the feud between the reported, rumored feud between Pettersson and Miller, or even when you talk about all the negative media attention, that they will say, okay, you're telling me that when you go into the corner to battle somebody, your first thought is, that JT Miller, I can't stand him, and I'm going to lose this battle. I just don't think it happens. I think what you said is bang on. It's like, hey, forget not getting this core just is not working. But maybe it's as simple as that.
But I will say it didn't start with the core talk. It started with the leave of absence and then the issues with Pettersson and Miller. That's where I think the foundation of this, where we are with Miller, started. I don't think it was not working, because the core last year went to Game 7 against Edmonton just a few months ago. This whole thing started with Pettersson and Miller, and now we're at a position where they're desperately trying to get rid of Miller, and it may happen today, or it may happen at the deadline. It may happen at the Four Nations, or it may happen in the offseason. We don't know.
The Four Nations that Connor McDavid will not be playing in.
Maybe JT Miller should pull out in protest of how he's being treated by the Canucks here.
You know, I was just thinking.
There you go.
I was thinking this today on my walk over. It's not like good news for the NHL. They didn't script it this way or anything. But given the potential for there being like a political context that heightens the stakes of a Canada-US matchup at the Four Nations tournament, I actually think they've sort of slipped into having this head-to-head, best-on-best duel at like the perfect time.
You're talking about the tariffs.
Yeah.
There's pride on the line now, for
I'm
real.
Saying, there's like stakes. Okay. Like, you know, I was always told about like the
Let's
Summit Series.
Let's go back to David Hume.
I just want to see the Pettersson-Miller USA-Sweden matchup.
There you go.
Isn't that what everyone wants to see? Especially if a trade happens before that.
I hadn't even considered that.
I've made this prediction. I don't know who's going to win this tournament, but I know that Canada will be in a very important game against either Sweden or the States, and JT Miller or Elias Pettersson will come up with a giant moment, maybe an overtime winning goal. Mark it down. Mark it down. It will happen.
So, or a massive hit.
Yeah. Well, there's that too. Maybe on Pettersson if it's USA Sweden. Now,
to the content.
We need it. To your point, Rick, about, look, it could happen today, it could happen next week, whenever. I mean, what's the latest you're hearing? And I also know Drance's colleague Pierre LeBrun reporting that the Canucks maybe have changed their stance. They're a little more willing to take back futures, draft picks, prospects than they were before.
Which is consistent with what Rick and I were hearing over the weekend, which is more than anything, we are open-minded. Yeah. The idea of looking for a center, like, that's out the window. This is too complicated for us to be to pick and choose.
Is that also a sign that there is some increased urgency? Like, hey, yeah, we could take this to the summer, but man, we'd really prefer to get it done here in the near future.
As I've said for a while, the offers for him have not been great. If they were great, the deal would have been done by now, right? The Canucks are not dealing from a position of strength. And to make things worse, the Canucks are struggling on the ice. So, you know, it makes them even look more desperate. Everyone's talking about New York, right? Well, the Rangers, last time I checked last night, are 6-0-3 in their past nine. They're not as desperate as they were three or four weeks ago when they were in a bad spiral and maybe would have given up more. Now they're 6-0-3. They're feeling good. And you know what? Maybe we don't have to give up a ton for JT Miller, right? I don't get the sense this morning anything's imminent. And Miller's not been – when I checked in this morning, he's not been asked to waive his no move. Like I said, this could happen in 5 minutes or 5 days or 5 weeks. Who knows? Sometimes you hear they're close with a team. Sometimes you hear they don't, that they're not close. It's all over the map, guys. It really is.
Yeah. I just struggle to imagine when you watch this team play, I struggle to imagine this continuing for too much longer.
They definitely want to get it sooner than later. Yeah. Hey, why did management huddle up at Rogers Arena Saturday morning for hours?
Yeah.
And it wasn't 1 or 2 hours.
Yeah.
They didn't huddle up. You don't huddle up at Rogers Arena unless there's a trade deadline. That's the only time to do it. These guys got together Saturday morning and said, hey, let's lock this door and try to get this done. And they apparently were very close. But, you know, why are they getting – they want this done sooner than later. The urgency – is the proof of the urgency is them getting together Saturday morning in a room and saying, let's get it done.
Yeah, the club also this week.
Record.
The club also this week, of course, having mid-season meetings for amateur and pro scouting staffs. So those meetings at Rogers Arena
meetings.
The Saturday meetings weren't part of that. You're right. Like, I'm not.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Thank you.
Yeah. You okay, buddy?
It's an emotional story. Yep. Emotions running high here. Another thing.
I'm just waiting to
one more banana.
I got to get that other banana in. Another thing from last night. Thatcher Demko spoke after the game, and you know, obviously admitted he's saying, "Hey, I haven't been good enough since I've come back." And I think he even said he's kind of lost touch with his game in his absence. And you know, Patrick Alvin said they really want to see more Thatcher Demko here down the stretch. And obviously, one, that's you hope he can get back to form and help your team win some games. But two, you just have to get some more information about him going into the offseason. But I got to say, I mean, look, hey, he could get right all of a sudden here and go on a run and look like the old Thatcher Demko from now until the end of the season. I know he's eligible for an extension on July 1st. It's very hard for me to imagine a situation where the Canucks are eager to extend him on July 1st, given all of the uncertainty around his health and his game right now.
Well, what do you guys think? We argued about this earlier today, or had a conversation about it earlier today on our show, and just how much Thatcher Demko, who has pulled for this guy in the past, how much he misses Ian Clark. And this is nothing against Marco Torianis, is it?
Torianis.
I don't know why I'm not... Torianis.
Torianis, close.
What about Luau? You had trouble with that earlier today.
Luau.
But how much does he miss Ian Clark? Because it just seemed like they had such a strong relationship that obviously worked well. It was Ian Clark, and Thomas, you can tell me if this is wrong or not, but it was him who pulled for Artur Seelofs to be inserted into the playoffs last year. And look how he played. Look how he's playing this year without Ian Clark around on a regular basis.
Great
points. Just wonder how much do they miss this guy? And I know his body's breaking down. He can't go on the ice as much as he would like to, or as much as the Canucks would want to. But I just wonder how much they miss him.
Sure.
How much Thatcher misses him.
I think it's a very fair question. There's a long history. Sergei Bobrovsky, Elvis Merzlikins, Jonas Korpisalo of sort of Ian Clark goaltenders struggling in the immediate aftermath of the club moving on from him as a goalie coach. And, you know, it sometimes for like some of them, certainly for Bobrovsky, it's somewhat short term, right? They find their game, but certainly a valid question given that history statistically. And yeah, I mean, look, here's the truth of the matter. The Canucks 5-on-5, dating back the last 10 games, in which they've only won two of them, 882 save percentage, 5-on-5. Like, you're not winning anything when your save percentage is that low.
Nope.
It's just too hard in this league right now. So Demko had some critical commentary about his game. He's right to have that commentary. He's got an 862 save percentage dating back, you know, his last five starts, like since returning, basically. This team's goaltending has been poor, and this team's not finishing their chances. And while they're playing, you know, pretty dull, low-event hockey, coin-flip hockey effectively, there is an element to which they're not getting, like, dominated most nights. And, in fact, some nights they're the better team in carry play. They're just not getting enough finish. And so they're not getting enough finish. They're not getting the saves. They don't have the offensive juice, and the vibes feel bad around them. And it's just like
bad combination.
Great. Like, I still think they're a better team than this, but it's hard for me to really, like, bang my fist on the table and say they're going to regress when you add all of that together.
Back to Demko for a second. There were a couple of moments last night, and I'm using one game as an example, and maybe that's not right, where he made a save. This happened twice. He made a save, and he looked behind him.
Yeah.
I just wonder about his confidence level right now. I mean, we did not see that last year or the year before that. You just didn't see that. I don't know if you remember those moments, but it just struck me that he's a really confident guy, borderline cocky, and I mean that as a compliment at the pro level when you're an elite athlete like he is. And I just don't remember seeing that. So I'm wondering where his confidence is right now.
Well, in his defense, he missed eight, 9 months.
Injuries, yeah.
Oh,
and
for sure.
Here's the other one for you. Not only did he pop Latias, but he only came back for one or two games. Before that, he was out 2 months. So you can honestly say he's been out 10 months and expecting him to be a Vezina guy. Jamie, you mentioned Demko's contract. I want to say this.
Yeah.
Canucks can start talking to him July 1st. But money's not going to be the big issue. It's going to be term, because the Canucks want to see durability down the stretch here, because, he had the back spasm. The biggest thing with Demko is, can you invest 6, 7, 8 years with him knowing he's going to get banged up every 5 weeks?
But
so it's really a durability call.
But that's kind of my point. Even if he's healthy from now to the end of the season, like, is that convincing you to go six or seven years with Demko, right? I don't think so.
It'll help his cause. It'll help the Canucks' cause to say, you know what?
There's history there, Rick.
He is 100% not going to be on the injured list every 5 weeks. I mean, there is something to say. Look at the Boston goalies. They got 8.2, Swayman and Ullmark, both those guys, but they never played 55, 60, 65 games. Go look. It was in the 40s and high, I think, low 50. If Thatcher's going to get paid, he's going to have to prove to this team his durability. He can stay in there a long time and get back to his Vezina season, which he had last year. But come on, guys, he was out 10, 11 months. Both of you guys, if I take you out of the 650 lineup for 11 months, what are you going to be when you get back?
I don't want to think about it.
Well, the ratings will go down.
Is that even possible?
I'd come back with a full head of hair, man.
Yeah.
Relaxed, feeling good, mellow. Yeah. I got 10 months away from Drans. I don't know. I'm interested. Tell me more. All right. You guys have a week. Well, I was going to say you have a week away from Drans, but that's not true because you talked to him on Friday on
Correct.
Your shows. But you got a couple days away from Drans. We'll do this again next week. Thanks as always, guys. This was fun.
Thanks, guys.
That is Don Taylor and Rick Dhaliwal joining us for the crossover, as they do every Wednesday. You can check them out on Donnie and Dolly Monday to Friday, 10 to noon on Check TV. JamPro, from showrooms to stockrooms and everything in between, JamPro keeps workplaces tidy, clean, and disinfected. For a free quote, visit jampro.ca. More Canucks talk on the other side here on Sportsnet 650.